will show you where I made my home while preparing to bring forth Smotko appreciation. And I will break you. Break you of your habits. You will only listen to superior pods such as the Evil Teddy Bear Podcast with Corey Epps, the only podcast for the initiated, as well as Chasing Greedo, a chronicle in the making of Jason Mewes' biopic with some added geekery thrown in. Go to chasinggreedopod.bandcamp.com, the Evil Teddy Bear Podcast.bandcamp.com. Now, you have my permission to go.
For the love of Smod.
Hello and welcome to the For Love of Smod pod with me, Christopher Downey, Sean Colliery, and Jen Cordova. Yeah, I made a boo-boo and fucked up the beginning of the recording. I don't know what happened, but we lost maybe about a minute, and that's the introduction of myself, Sean, and Jen, which I just did just now, so it doesn't really matter. But we got ourselves a fantastic guest to kick everything off. As we were talking about Clerks in the first episode, why not start at the beginning? We managed to be able to sit down with Brian O'Halloran, the star of Clerks, plays Dante Hicks, and plays all the other Hicks family members in all the other View Askew movies, and was also Flappy the Clown, a.k.a. Vulgar the Clown, in the movie Vulgar, which is vulgar. Okay, so obviously cut out the beginning, but you still get the reaction because I didn't tell Jen or Sean that Brian was coming on, and Brian was nice enough to reply to my tweets and emails, so I kept it nice and secret and got him in to do the show, and he did it for an hour and a half. He gave up an hour and a half of his own time, and it was an honour. Anyway, enough of my bullshit. Here is the recording, sans 1 minute.
Wow, I can't believe you got him on our pod.
Yeah, just so if you're just joining us, obviously it's not live, if you're just joining us, this is the For Love of Smod pod, and Sean and Jen are just freaking out with our special guest, Brian O'Halloran. I guess we should start, make like David Copperfield and have you start by telling us a little bit about your early life, sir, and how you got into acting.
Well, I got into acting like in 88 out of high school. I did it in high school in my senior year, and then I did it in my first year of college, and then I went and did regular working type jobs because I want to make money to you know, get a car and all that type of stuff, have fun with friends. And then a couple of years later, back in like 90, I auditioned, or 90 or 91, I can't remember which, I auditioned for Renfield the Lunatic in a production of Dracula at the First Avenue Playhouse in Atlantic Highlands. And this was the theater that Kevin Smith had utilized to hold auditions for his film Clerks, which that happened in 92, 93. And so then I had been doing quite a few productions in the local New Jersey, New York area when I auditioned for Kevin. And I auditioned as an extra.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't really his original choice as Dante.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He talked about that a little on in the beginning of Smodcast when he was doing the layout of all of his movies and stuff and the backstory. I remember him saying something about that. Right. Weren't you supposed to be like just somebody to walk in, walk out of the store?
Yeah, I mean, that's like what he was auditioning. He pretty much had, I think, like the six major characters pretty much cast in his mind. And yeah. He was holding auditions for all the other like customer type of parts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Cool. So how did you end up getting the role?
He had, you know, I did this audition. If you buy the, if you have the 10-year, the Clerks X DVDs, you'll see in the extra DVDs, they give you the actual auditions because they've Vincent Pereira videotaped the auditions for Kevin so he could go over them. And
oh, wow.
I guess he really enjoyed, first of all, it was a very bad audition for me, but he enjoyed it enough because I was playing a villain in another play at the time when the auditions happened called Wait Until Dark. And I was playing the character Mr. Rote. And it was a show, actually, that I was playing opposite Marilyn Gigliotti, who plays Veronica in the original Clerks. So it was kind of odd that I did this evil type of monologue for him. He enjoyed it enough that he called me back, and I read, you know, he only gave you a few pages of what the script was. Like, I didn't know what I was really auditioning for. And so it was something that was really kind of weird that, you know, he auditioned, he had me read the whatchamacallit scene, the scene with the contractors.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we just read that part, and he goes, well, what do you think? And I was like, oh, it's pretty funny. I said, the other guy's really funny. And you know, he's like, well, do you think you want to do it? I was like, sure. And I was like, well, who are they in the film? And he's like, well, they're the main guys. I'm like, oh, I thought you had those already cast. And he said, no, I do, but don't worry about it. That's pretty much it.
Because he was supposed to cast himself, wasn't he? As
he was supposed to be Randall.
It was Ernie.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be Randall.
It was Ernie originally, I think, who was cast as Dante.
Yeah, and then he just pulled himself out.
Yeah.
So yeah. What did you was there any, I mean, don't want to obviously stir up any shit or anything like that, but was there any trouble on set? Did Ernie get annoyed in front of anybody else regarding the fact that he'd lost out?
I didn't know that was the situation until it was all said and done, to be honest with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
so he talked to everybody like later about or earlier about the fact, and then he came up to you. I was like, "Hey,
that I don't know. You know, I don't know how it went down on his end. You know, what I just said is pretty much all I knew at my end. Yeah. Like he didn't say like, oh well, you know, he made it sound like to me that the guy had dropped out who was going to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I suppose to be fair. From what you gather from the Clerks X DVD, he says that Ernie hadn't learned the lines and he played it all, not all wrong, but he'd sort of, his approach was a bit too sort of slick, whereas Dante's meant to be uptight, which is exactly how you played him, sir. So perhaps he was trying to be sort of diplomatic.
Correct.
I don't think he would want to come up and say, oh, yeah, I got rid of that guy in favor of yourself. You might not have felt too good about yourself in that instance.
So right. We,
yeah.
I'm personally glad it turned out that way.
Oh, and me as well, oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think everybody would agree that it's the perfect person for the job, sir. I don't see anybody else in that role, even if they remade it.
Have you guys been watching the train wreck? On C Smod on his YouTube channel, he's been throwing up all these old videos from Clerks 2 and stuff from production. It seems like it was like a party the whole entire time. Everybody just kind of having a really good time the whole entire shoot. Is that how it went down?
The second one definitely went down kind of like there was always something to do that, you know, during shooting. I mean, when you're talking about, okay. It's not like we were setting up, okay, now here's the real serious dramatic scene of such and such. You know, it was like, okay, get ready for the donkey scene. All right, we're going to the go-kart scene. Okay, here's the scene where, you know, Elias says, where Porch Monkey said. I mean, as you could see that every scene was so hilarious. The only scene that really wasn't really like, oh, my God, we're going to have a blast in, was pretty much one of the last scenes we shot, which was the scene in the jail cell with myself, Muse, Kevin, and of course Anderson, who just rocks that scene.
Definitely.
Yeah. The thing that shocked me was, you watch Clerks, and the performances are good, just comedic performances, and fair enough, you get a little bit more emotional. But when you watch Clerks 2 and see you guys sort of spill your guts regarding your relationship with one another, it's incredible. It's a fantastic scene. I mean, I find it difficult. I've got like emotional constipation of the eyes and brain. So when I go, so when I'm watching things, you know, on TV or if I'm at the cinema, I find it difficult to actually physically get emotional. I mean, my mom can cry. I mean, she'll cry at like big things, like, you know, Michael Clark Duncan dying at the end of The Green Mile, and she cried it ever like that bit much more recently when we watched it because he actually did die. So, I found myself, you know, I felt the lump at the back of the throat because it's like relatable. You know, please don't leave me, that kind of thing. You know, it's a friend. It's not like being in a romantic relationship where you have you're obliged to sort of stay with the person. You know, it's sad because, you know, he literally throws himself down, and the look you give him, and it's a fantastic scene. Both parts. But I can imagine it would have been sad, being that it's the last scene you shot as well.
It definitely was. There was amongst all of us, like, wow, this is kind of it. Out in L.A., I mean, we did then have that was the last scene we shot out in L.A. because we did a lot of the restaurant scenes and everything shot in L.A. All the exteriors and the stuff with the original store, that was actually done in Leonardo in Jersey. And so we did 4 weeks in L.A. in Orange County. And then we did a week out in New Jersey. And so that was... It was an emotional, high on that sense that it was the last scene that we were shooting in L.A. And here we're wrapping up the bigger crew, the giant crew that we had in L.A.
Yeah.
Down to the crew that, the compact crew that we then took into Jersey. But yeah, and that scene particular, the ending scene in the jail, that was something that was worked and reworked by Kevin. And even like Scott and Jeff had really put some really great input into how that ending was crafted, because that wasn't the original ending. That was the first draft that we all saw. And this came out like so well. I mean, I really think it touched a beautiful piece, a beautiful nerve that Kevin touched upon with everybody.
Absolutely.
How was it? And like at the moment when you guys were actually shooting that scene at that moment, and you were saying your lines and stuff, like how did it feel to you to, looking at him.
We only rehearsed it three times. We only rehearsed actually saying the lines and blocking it at maximum three times. Jeff was just like, okay, I don't want to lose what I'm feeling here about these lines. Because, when you're portraying the character, when you really think about where these guys have been and where that moment brought them and where they are go or what they're going to do to get out of it, it's very emotional. Even after cut, we were still in that moment. You know what I mean? Of just like, wow.
Yeah.
So it was beautiful, man. It
was especially beautiful. After so many years of working together, you guys have a bromance, if you want to call it that, from all the movies you've done together.
It is really weird too, because I'm based here in the New York, New Jersey area. I'm East Coast the entire time, and yeah. Jeff and Kevin and those guys, they've been living out in L.A. now, going over 10 years, I'm sure. I don't correspond with Jeff. I correspond with him through emails, like maybe once or twice a year, but I don't it's not like I have dinner with him every other weekend or every couple of months or stuff like that. It's just, it's this weird automatic chemistry that we have.
As soon as you guys see each other again, it's just
That's weird. He said the exact same thing about yourself. He says that you maybe talk via email once or twice a year, but as soon as you're in the room together, you sort of click back together, and there you go.
Right.
And when you're it's insane.
And when you throw in Kevin's dialogue in it, where it's just he writes it so natural for us to deliver. Yeah, certain topics and certain things that are said are not absolutely natural. But the obvious things, but at the same rate, he just has a knack for how to write it, and we have a knack of, we just are lucky enough to pick up the way he likes it delivered.
One thing he said recently, somebody criticized his dialogue. He says everybody just sounds like you when they speak in a Kevin Smith film. I disagree. I think that especially with yourself and Jeff's characters, you both have a different way of putting things. You're both articulate in your delivery.
There's a lot of, I grew up with a lot of very literate nerds. You know what I mean? I'm a gamer. And we were the type of ones that, people would take their vocabulary tests, and out of the 20 words on the vocabulary list, people like, I'm not even going to use half of these freaking words, right? And then we are the kids years later that actually use those other half of those 20 words that in our daily speech.
Yeah.
Like whenever I see on Facebook, so-and-so is engaged to so-and-so, or so-and-so just got married, I don't go, hey, congrats on the wedding. I go, congrats on your future nuptials. You know what I mean? Like, who says that shit? It's just another way of saying it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I always tend to do that, especially when writing something. I don't like to put it in the parlance I would use when saying it, because you like to be a little bit sort of lazier when you're speaking, especially if you're speaking to your friends. But right. Can I just ask, when you started, or when you sat down with the script and you first had the chance to read it, did you ever look at any of your lines and think, how the fuck am I going to say this? This is like either vulgar or shit. What if my mom sees and what's she going to think? Did anything like that go through your head when you were looking at the script? Did anything worry you? Obviously, you thought it was funny, but you know what I mean?
Right. When I first read the script, it was during the NBA final, NBA like playoffs, and the Knicks were involved. And I was living in New Brunswick, which is the town that Rutgers University is based out of here in New Jersey. And we were all renting out of a house. And so I was up in my room reading the script, and these guys are watching the playoffs down in the living room. And I'd come down, I'm like, oh my God, you got to hear this. And they're like, shut up, shut up. Ewing's about to throw a three for row. And I'm like, he's going to miss it. We all know that. Listen to this line. It's pretty funny. I never thought, first of all, that it was going to be that, you know, seen by tons of people, just because it was pushing such an envelope of subject matter. Like, I got to be honest, I didn't know what the hell snowballing was about until I read it. You know what I mean? Like, that was the first time I ever heard of that terminology. I'm like, what? What the hell is snowball? You know, and I hang around pretty, you know, fucking hilarious, messed up people. But at the same time, it never came across me. What the hell is snowballing? And then even then, when my mother finally, like, Kevin, after he was done, he gave us all VHS copies of the film. Yes, yeah. VHS was still used back then. When I sat in my living room to show my family and some friends this movie and my mother, and I'm just like, oh, great, this is going to be weird, you know, showing this to my mother. But needless to say, when that part came up, she was laughing her ass off. And I'm like, what the hell is that all about?
it truly is a funny moment. So, I think Kevin was saying when he was watching Chasing Amy with his mum, and it came to the scene about, I think it was the Jaws-esque scene where they're talking about all the things that they've done and all the wounds that they've got going down on girls. Right. And she started laughing. And at the end, she said, oh, I relate with that film in a way you could never understand. That literally blew his brain, because he's like, oh, shit, you know, she's going down on my dad. That's, I don't want to know that. That's a thought and an image that I really didn't need to know. Right. So, yeah, absolutely. It's funny when your parents react in such a way.
Yeah, it's definitely odd to picture him in those type of situations. But, you know, they had to obviously get into some sort of situation for you to exist.
Yeah,
right.
So, go ahead.
I was going to ask him, have you ever, or what have you been doing, like, after the Clerks? Like, what was your favorite roles after doing Clerks that you were offered because of Clerks?
There's a couple of movies that are independent movies that I've done that were kind of fun. One is called The Junior Defenders. It was called Groupies many years ago when I filmed it, about these four child actors who had a show not that far off from like the Power Rangers back in the 70s. It's a mockumentary. It's a fake documentary. I recommend it to anybody. It's got myself, Ali Sheedy, Jason Frank, and a few other people. Really, really great mockumentary. And it's narrated by John Waters. And that was a fun role that I played, a young child star that years later, what happens is at their cliffhanger episode in the 70s, the network doesn't renew the show. It cancels it. So then all these two groupies, fanboys, years later, high go around and kidnap the original four actors cast to finish the episodes.
Wow.
it's a really funny one. I think you can get it on Netflix. I think you can get it even still.
I'll be checking that out. That sounds like a really good premise.
It was a very cute movie. Another one I did called Drop Dead Roses, which these two guys, I shot this up in Toronto, Canada. These two guys own a flower shop called Drop Dead Roses, but it's not your typical flower shop. It's the type of delivery that you either send them a bunch of dead flowers or somebody a box of crushed chocolates or something else that's vile to tell them that, hey, we've broken up. Oh, or hey, you know, I caught you cheating on me. This is to let you know I know. Or hey, by the way, you're adopted. Things like that.
I've heard about this movie. I think Kevin talked about this movie. I heard about this.
It was pretty funny. You know, once again, it was me in kind of like a service industry type of role, but it was very funny. And then, of course, there are great ones that I did with Kevin's, you know, involvement. Obviously, Vulgar is a movie I'm very proud of, written by Brian Johnson. And you know,
that actually brings me to one of my questions. How did you get cast in it? Were you recommended by Kevin, or did Brian like what you'd done in Clerks? Because obviously Brian wasn't involved with Clerks in any way, because him and Kevin had that falling out at the time.
Right. And so this is now, you know, years later, Kevin had already done Mallrats at this time. And when Walt Flanagan drew the character of the logo for View Askew Films, which is that vulgar guy in the party hat and the bustier and the high heels and the fishnets, you know, Kevin's like, oh, I totally want that as my logo for my company. And then I think one day, I think they were talking, and Johnson was with Kevin, and is like, what do you think this guy's story would be? And Kevin's like, I don't know, why don't you write about it? And so it was kind of like a throwdown. Wow. And thinking about who would play it, I guess, I don't know exactly, but he, you know, he on the outsets thought of me portraying this role. And so when he gave me the script, he even said it to me, like, by the way, I was thinking about you when I wrote this. And when I first read the first draft, which is even a more vile and more dark, even darker than the final cut was, of the film. And I was like, oh, my God, like there was feces involved and all sorts of craziness. Yeah. And I was like, what do you mean you were thinking about me when you wrote this? What's that supposed to mean?
I mean, I mean, like, I listened to Tell Him Steve Dave and watch Comic Book Men and things like that. Brian is deliciously fucked up in the head, and it's fantastic,
and we all love it.
Absolutely. I mean, the stuff that he comes, obviously, you know, like was it War of the Undead or Army of the Undead, where Hitler raises all the old monster, the classic Universal monsters. I mean, I don't know anyone who would ever think of that. It's great. It's, and when I didn't know about Vulgar until I was a bit older, and then I looked up the trailer. It's kind of hard to get over here in the UK because I'm in Edinburgh, Scotland. But I was like, I have to have this. That looks fucked up. How did you find shooting the rape scenes?
It was dark. Obviously, it was very, you know, and first
it
of all,
it is kind of rape.
Yeah, it is. And you have, at the time, a much heavier Ethan Suplee as one of the people on top of you, which was, you know, a bit more than just the rape. It was the type of thing, first of all, I had to get it into makeup, first of all. And then that scene was shot, I think, over a 2-day period. I can't remember how long we shot it. But we had to recreate the assault, and the makeup had to be distressed and you know, very accurate from scene to scene, and which we covered it over 2 days. And so I'd be sitting in my makeup chair for about an hour almost, to almost longer. And just having to get into that mindset. Well, here it was. Now, you know, I had done some research on my own about men who've been sexually assaulted, and they take it a lot. I'm not saying that women know you. Women, you could take it. It's okay, you know. But it really, really, really messes up men even more so because of this, you know, machismo type of, you know, men shouldn't be raped, blah blah blah. Not like women should, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So just sitting in the makeup chair for that, there'd be times where my mind would be gone and I'm in tears, just streaming down. I'd have to sit still in the chair. And my makeup girl, Paris Petrick, she was like, honey, are you okay? And it was like, no, keep going. I'm getting there. And they're like, oh, okay. And it was just that type of thing where the set was a closed set. We had only the essential people there and necessary for filming. And, you know, I really pushed myself a lot. I'm very proud of that role.
Yeah, you should be. It's
amazing.
180. You know, from Dante in certain respects. Fair enough, he's a schlub, he's a Charlie Brown-esque character, but it goes dark in ways that you couldn't really take Dante. I mean, it would just be insane.
It's definitely, you know, it's definitely Johnson's mind taking everybody down this, okay, it's going to be a funny comedy, buddy comedy, then up, left turn into darkness.
Kevin's performance in that is surprisingly different, because obviously he's shaved and he's playing Malcolm, essentially, the gay producer character. Had you seen Kevin without a beard at that point?
Oh, well, yeah. If you watch the original ending to the first Clerks, after the alternate ending where Dante gets shot, there's you watch the credits, and then there's a teaser or a stinger at the end of that credits where Kevin comes in clean shaven as a customer going, hello, hello. And doesn't know that he's dead, and he grabs the cigarettes and bolts out. So I've seen him, you know, clean shaven before, and you know, and to be honest with you, when we were first ready to start to film, we rehearsed for a month of just the dialogue of the original Clerks. I'd go down to the store and we'd rehearse in the store after he would close it, and for like an hour or two. And he had told me, you know, do you mind? I had the goatee. This is the look I was rocking back in 93. He's like, do you mind shaving the goatee? And I was like, okay. So this was like literally like 5 days before we were about to do shooting. And I came down for one of the rehearsals and he was like, oh, do you think you can grow that goatee back? I was like, hey, what is that supposed to mean? because I do look very baby faced when I'm shaving myself. You know what you see in Mallrats, I'm shaving in that, obviously.
Yeah, you guys, I think maybe the suit and the longer hair in Mallrats make you look a bit older.
Correct.
In Vulgar, which is, you know, what is it, 2 years later, you really do look young. She got the young hair in that, yeah. So,
right.
But yeah, absolutely. Next question, obviously, is how did you feel? Obviously, you played Dante here and there over the years, but how did you feel when you got fully back into the role for Clerks 2 and when they announced Clerks 2? How did you feel you were going to tackle a slightly older version of the character that you played back in, you know, 1983?
Well, first of all, I didn't stop aging myself, so I was that older, you know what I mean? So it's just me, how I would play this role and what this guy's life would have been like. And it's just, you know, it's not far off of what we really are as people in a sense, although personality wise I'm more of a Randall than I am of a Dante. Yes, I'm a try to please people type of guy, yes, but at the same point I'm a more of a wisecracking, you know, I'll turn on a dime type of, if you give me crap,
yeah.
Give me crap, I'll give you crap back. Like,
oh, yeah,
tenfold.
Tenfold and funnier, too.
Yeah. One up.
So getting back into the role, it wasn't that hard. Like I said, we had, over the years leading up to that movie, we had revisited these characters a few times with, you know, the Clerks cartoon. We did it again with Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. You know, these characters popped up from here and there, you know, so it wasn't that hard. And once again, that was something that Kevin had prearranged rehearsals in LA leading up to filming a month ahead of time. And one of the first read-throughs that we had of the script, it was myself and Scott and Kevin and Jeff came down and Jay. And Rosario couldn't make the first read-through because she was, I think, shooting Kill Shot at the time or something. And so we went through the first one and everything was good. And he's like, hey, this sounds pretty good. And then Rosario showed up for the read-through. We all introduced each other. This was all held at Kevin's offices. And we start the next one. And we're doing the read-through yet again. And it was so funny because she's in the room. I guess we just felt the pressure, meaning me and Jeff, that we kind of really upped our delivery of how we were doing things. And Kevin is like, that's it. You know what? I really don't think we need a lot. You guys are really ready to go. And it was the type of thing that when she said her goodbyes and she left the office, Kevin's like, what was that about to me and Jeff? Like, what are you talking about? Like, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, like, into the character and really giving it your all. I was like, well, come on. Hello. There's an A-lister in the room. I'm not going to be like, I don't want to be the one dragging anything down. I'm trying to get my.
Yeah. It's like, I want to get up to that level.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's like, what the hell? Just be yourself. You played it perfect before.
Right, right, right. No, I mean, we had notes from the first pass, but it was fun.
Oh, okay.
So we really did up our game. And he's like, you know what? It's just going to waste everybody's time if we keep doing this. And we're going to rehearse a little bit once we get on set anyway. So yeah. I was like, all right. So then I had like 2 weeks of just to myself at a hotel in, you know, in the city of Los Angeles. So I was like, all right, right on. Here we go.
How many times have you been out to LA?
I've been out to LA probably about 6 or 7 times. Mm-hmm. I was going there like every spring for like the first 4 years after Clerks. And then I just would get jobs here on the East Coast as well. And then I would go out there from time to time. So I like it out there. I like it a lot. I mean, I love the weather. I can't stand the traffic. The food is really good out there. It's just sometimes
traffic sucks.
Yeah. And sometimes the people, there are certain people based out there that I just want to you know, it's not always about movies and television and what's going on in the entertainment world. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, we know. Yeah.
Yeah.
By following Kevin's stuff, we definitely know, yeah.
I have no idea because I live in Edinburgh, Scotland. I don't think you guys have ever been here. So it's nothing like that here, really. But
I've been there. I've been outside of Edinburgh.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember where. We had a layover somewhere. Oh, I remember. I was close.
But earlier on, before I whipped Brian out in front of you, Brian and I were talking about his Celtic blood, I suppose you could say, his green blood, first generation American with Irish parents. Tell us a little bit about that, sir, about your family.
Well, I'm the youngest of three sons, and my father and mother and my two brothers were all born in Ireland. My father from Galway, the West Coast, and my mother from Roscommon, which is the county just north of County Galway on the West Coast. And my two brothers were born in Galway. And so my father came to America first. I believe he came over in either 63 or 64. And then that's how they usually happen. The father establishes an apartment and gets work and, you know, goes through the process of getting, you know, immigration working. And then my mother came over with my two brothers, and then I was born in 69. So they came over in 65. I was born in 69. So, and our summer holidays, you know, we're always back in Ireland. Some people in New Jersey we're going to go to do the Jersey Shore for summers, or some people like to do Disney here in the United States. We went back to Ireland every year. My mother still goes back to Ireland and England because her brother and sister moved to England in the 70s because Ireland was very bad with work. We had more people than we had jobs, kind of like we have here. People were immigrating to England. And so they established roots in Birmingham, England. And so as we speak right now, my mother left last Thursday. She's now in England, although I think today they were driving over to France through the Channel. So she's going to spend a couple of days in France and then come back. And then she goes to Ireland. She does it every year for 3 weeks. But I love it. I've been there probably about 18, 20 times and love it every single time. I tell people all the time, you know, if you ever get a chance, go to Ireland, you know, go to Scotland, go to England. All you really need is pub money, and go to a local pub and bring your suitcases and you'll be chatting up a little bit. Yeah. And you know, and what happens is locals go, "Where are you staying, Yank?" And you go, "Oh, we don't know yet. We're thinking about a BB." "Oh, no. You'll stay here. Next thing you know, they're shouting over to their wife, Mary, is Sean, where's Sean tonight? Or is he? Tell Sean to go over Margaret's house. You don't mind a juvenile's bed, do you?" Next thing you know, you're staying at some teenage room and you got, you know, free room in the apartment. And that's the thing about Ireland I love.
The funny thing, it's exactly how it happened to me when I went over there when I was like 10 with my parents. Exactly that way. Yeah, it's so funny.
It's really the way to do it. And it's a beautiful country.
Yeah, both definitely. I have family in Sligo because we went to the other side of Ireland from Sligo. And we were kind of just bouncing around, just seeing what was around, because we'd never really traveled around Ireland. We'd just been to Sligo a couple of times to see family.
Yeah, I have an uncle up in Sligo. As a matter of fact, my great aunt, my mother was raised in Sligo for her teenage years. She stayed with an aunt for a couple of years there. And so we'd drive up from Galway up to Sligo and then back down. I remember once I was in Galway, and this was when the Troubles were still going on. And I remember, you know, bank trucks there are still today are escorted by the military, you know, because in the 70s and the 80s, there was a lot of bank robbers. They would just take the whole truck. And so I remember I was turning a corner and I didn't realize I'm walking up a shop street in Galway, and I get this rifle pointed like right into my chest. I was like, "Whoa." And coming from New York in America, I'm like, "Whoa, what's going on?" And I didn't realize. And he was like, "You got to go around the block the other way." I'm like, "Oh, I didn't realize there was a bank truck being, you know,
loaded
or whatever it was." Yeah. Like, you know, it's just the type of weirdness that, you know, back in the 70s and 80s that it was, you know.
Shit.
Yeah. Wow.
The same thing. In Sligo, you're closer to the north, and there was a lot more of that up there as well. You saw a lot more military just because it's closer to the Northern Ireland border.
But I have to say, sorry. So I've been taken aback by the the Irish accent you did there was just fantastic. Obviously, you know, you're able to do it because your parents are
Irish.
It gave
me a little bit of chills.
It was insane.
That, you know, my mother is always like, Brian, what are you doing? Have you gotten a real job? Are you done with that silly acting thing yet?
Well, hopefully you're not.
No.
Good.
What are some of your things you like to do outside of acting and stuff, like your personal stuff? Do you like doing any motor sports or any, you said you like gaming, like what was your favorite games growing up and stuff?
You know, when I was role-playing games, when we were doing that, table games in high school, we did a lot of like DC Heroes. We did Iron Crown, which was the Iron Crown games, which were the guys that did all the Lord of the Rings board games. We did Space Opera. We did Paranoia. We even did the Judge Dredd game. It was a horrible system, but we still did it.
Just went to see the Judge Dredd movie. So
how was it?
Yeah.
Anybody read the comics? Even like one or two?
Yeah,
a little bit.
It's just like the comics. It's nothing like the movie. So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, so I don't really count the Stallone movie as a Judge Dredd product.
No.
Judge Dredd parody. You know, it's almost
really
on par.
It's really comical.
Yeah. Speaking of hobbies, sir, I think Jeff mentioned that in the Snowball Effect that you were a dance champion of sorts.
Dance champion.
You used to go dance, like break dancing competitions or something like that.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, we used to, I used to do karaoke at times. And I won a karaoke contest doing Ice Ice Baby. And I had backup dancers with me as well. I had these two black guys who were really good friends of mine. And they were like, yeah, we'll go with you and we'll be your dancers. I'm like, perfect. So I didn't have the Z stripes on the side of my head, but I still had a flat top type of haircut at the time. This is even before I did start. And
no, I wish I could see this picture.
I know.
It's literally like
video.
21 at the time. And so we did that. If that's what he's referring to, I can't remember other times that I'm a dance champion, but I used to DJ at certain clubs in my early 20s as well. A friend of mine had a DJ company and me and him would do that. I could hold my own back in the day and I think I can still do it now, but you know.
Are we going to see you DJing anywhere anytime soon?
Right.
Not DJing now. Personally, no slight against anybody out there. I don't want Skrillex or anyone like contacting me going like it's a tough job.
It's too
but
digital.
It's very digital now. Like, wow, man, we have to carry like 10 crates of vinyl every gig we went to, and including the equipment. And, you know, you made me had fresh needles and all this other stuff. Now it's just like I got my laptop, I got my mixer tables, and that's
press
all.
Enter.
Yeah. Right. Just like, wow, that's okay. You're two steps away from just being a radio station that has that audio box.
Yeah. Right.
Everything's just like on a computer, an iPod. All they have to do is click a button to play a song.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, they do good jobs. I'm not slamming what is down out there right now.
Oh, no, not at all. They got to mix all that and auto. Yep. I can't do
You still got to have a feel of rhythm. You still got to have a feel of what song should follow another song. And you still have the skill of reading your crowd. As to you don't kill the energy when it's coming up or bringing it down, whatever. You know?
Yeah.
Sweet. So, yeah, James, if you've ever met James Franco, he's Kevin's audio dude for a lot of his live podcasts and stuff that he does up at the club, the Lovitz and stuff like Hollywood Babylon. And he's an old DJ from back early 80s, late 80s. He has his own podcast on the network called The Breaks. That you should probably check out.
Sweet. Other hobbies. Awesome. I have a group of friends, and we are big avid poker players. So we play. Cool. That's another hobby that we like to do. And you know, it's only like an hour or so drive down to Atlantic City from where we live up here in New York and New Jersey. So we like to do that quite a bit. You know, I have a circle of friends who are writers, directors, and other actors, and we'll you know, we're always workshopping their works, and we're putting on, you know. We do plays and stuff like that here in the New York City area.
Oh, cool. Do you have anything to plug that you'd be doing soon?
Not right now. We were working on a web series about a New Jersey community theater group, which would you know, comedy series. But that's been put on hold for a while. One of the producers had to step away. So we're just reorganizing and seeing where we're going to go back with that. And then, you know, Otherwise, I really don't have anything immediately that I'm working on. There's like four scripts that are like circling and being workshopped right now that hopefully we can push out. The other thing is
limbo.
Yeah, a friend of mine invited me to do the introduction to his horror film called Mr. Hush. It's a throwback to the 80s style horror movies. So that came out on DVD earlier this month. And I'm going to be at Horror Realm, which is a horror convention out in Pittsburgh, the weekend of the 19th of September. So if anybody wants to see me at Horror Realm convention out in Pittsburgh, by all means. And I'll be doing a couple of other conventions this coming month and in October as well. I think I'll be at Comic-Con only for one day in New York. That's the Thursday in New York, and that's October like 11th or something like that. And then I'll be up in Worcester, Massachusetts for Rock and Shock, which is another convention. It's like horror-based and music-based. And that is the weekend of the 11th or the 12th through the 14th. And then Halloween weekend, there's Chiller Theater, which is another convention based in New Jersey.
I love the Chillers. They're so good.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I'll be there this October for the Halloween weekend.
Awesome. Sweet.
So can I ask two-part question? So are you interested in playing Dante again for the proposed Clerks 3 stage play?
Oh, I'm all over that. If Kevin, if Kevin gets it, first of all, it's hitting right into my sweet spot. It's doing live theater, and that's what I enjoy doing the best. So if he does it, I'm all over it. Trying to get Jeff on a live stage, that's going to be pretty tricky. I mean, there's going to have to be either that, or we're going to have to do like hologram Biggie Smalls type of thing. Yeah. We're going to have to have hologram Jeff Anderson to maybe.
I mean, it can only be Jeff Anderson or a holograph Jeff Anderson, and the same with yourself. It really couldn't be. It couldn't be anybody else in my opinion.
There's no stand-in for you two.
Yeah, I always laugh at that with the Mallrats when Universal Studios had Seth Green on standby if Jay wasn't going to cut it. Yeah. I was like, really? Wow, that would have been weird. Completely.
That would have been horrible.
I don't know, horrible. It just wouldn't be Jay. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be
whatever.
No.
It would, he completely plays that. It's an otherworldly performance. Obviously, if you watch Freddy versus Jason, you get a similar performance from the guy emulating Muse in that. But prior to that, no one acted like that. In fact, no one acted like you guys were ahead of the game with the bromance format. That wasn't really around as well. So I think it's.
I think the only people who attempted before that to do that type of stoner type of thing was, I guess you could call the Spicoli character.
Yeah,
from past times. You know what I mean?
Spicoli.
But he wasn't really connected to anybody hardcore.
No. And plus he was more surfer stoner than just, stoner on the street down your block.
Yeah.
He was the friendly stoner.
Yeah, he was West Coast stoner, while Jay was, East Coast stoner.
do you think you'll have any involvement in Hit Somebody when it comes about?
Oh, I would love to. I haven't. I haven't seen Kevin in a couple of in a while, but when I do, I definitely would love to mention that to him. That I'm a huge. I mean, that is my sport. Hockey is my main sport.
Yeah.
That's the connection we both have. So I would love to be involved in that anyway, any which way there is. Like, look, if I'm a manager of the equipment in one of the scenes, I don't.
I was gonna
care.
Say
anything clerk, to be a part of it.
A clerk giving out the skates.
Yeah, I don't know anything. Or, it would be funny if he just threw a little nod that, the character of Dante and Randall is at one of the hockey games that this takes place for some reason.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Or you guys sitting there heckling the other team on the other side, screaming at them through the penalty box, and then that's the only time you see you two.
It's
so like a little crossover.
It's funny because I know he said multiple times he wants this to be like his end game. So he wants everybody he's ever worked with to sort of be involved. But do you think there'd be a chance, because it's the last film, that it'll be a partially view askew in the fact that there might be some characters, maybe Jay and Bob, yourself and Jeff appearing as Dante and Randall. Do you think that could be a possibility?
Or
do
you think that's dangerous? No, I'm sure that's a possibility. You know, I always what's ludicrous is I can't fathom Kevin just saying I have nothing left to say.
Yeah.
You know, I know.
Film wise,
I mean, trying to write it down, isn't he? He's like, I said he needed to write it down over 100-something pages.
Right. You know, and if that's what it is, and you know, he's moved on to his next stage of his life, which is now on the other side of the camera, being a producer, being a distributor, you know, running this empire that is the Smodcast. You know what I mean? And bringing in talent that you would not see in the mainstream and giving them their voice. I totally appreciate that, and I understand that. But I mean, you even look at people, someone like Clint Eastwood, who still has, even if it's not his story that he wrote, he still wants to be directing and he still wants to get it out there and putting out great product for that matter, you know?
Yeah. It's sad, but I don't think that'll be the end, in my opinion.
I think he's gonna get the itch sometime soon. Yeah. Like a little after this.
You know, the thing I hope that he would get the itch for, and that people, someone out there, some producer out there, or someone just comes to them, or either Adult Swim or Cartoon Network, or, you know, one of them come, or even FX comes to him and go, you know what, we want to bring back the cartoon. Because I think the Clerks cartoon now would be a ginormous hit out there.
Yeah, it would.
Have you talked to Jay lately?
I talked to Jay a couple of weeks ago. He was in Jersey and I was down in Red Bank. Has he said that he's doing it? I mean, I know they're doing like an animated movie or something like that.
Jay has kind of gotten in with one of his little rants before and almost let a little bit too much information out. I can't remember. I think he was saying that's what they're doing is the Clerks cartoon, but a cartoon movie. But he's letting Jay do everything with it.
Oh, no. I think that's, what's it called? Jay and Silent Bob's super groovy cartoon movie.
I'm talking about the actual cartoon show that we had.
Well, yeah, Kevin, yeah. Kevin wants, there's so many rumblings about that. He said I don't think being in talks, but like people are interested in that and he wants to bring that back.
And if anything, he doesn't need it on a network. He could just put it on his own Smodcast label. He doesn't have to go through Cartoon Network or anything. And if they want to pick it up later, then go for it.
Right. I'm sure someone like, you know, now that he has spoilers on Hulu, it could even go through that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can. I would do great on Hulu, actually. That would be perfect.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it's now cheap enough to produce. Back in 2000, it was actually like $250,000 an episode to produce, going through the normal net means and sending it over to Korea and all this other stuff. But now that, you know, now that it's a lot easier to do things on the computer, it makes the production cost that much cheaper. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, we're all still around, you know, Jeff, myself, and Jay, and himself, the four main characters are still around, and then you could still bring in your carry, you know, the cameo guest spots like we did, and we can do things like we're doing now. Right?
You guys can literally do it from East Coast, West Coast. It doesn't matter where you guys are. You just got to record the audio, right? Exactly.
And your voices don't age. So I mean, you could be doing the show as long as they've done The Simpsons. And you could look exactly the same as you did when you were in your sort of early to mid-20s.
Yeah.
That's what the thing is. When we were doing that, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be our Simpsons. It's going to be our blah, blah, blah. And then we got F'd in the A, as my friend would have said.
Yeah, I don't understand what happened.
It's a huge, long, political type of horseshit story. I'm sure Kevin has it on one of the DVDs.
There's a Smodcast of them talking about 2.5 to 3 hours about it. And him just ranting and how pissed he was.
Yeah.
But it was enough to spark not a rivalry, but like a feud, like an animated feud between Kevin, even though it wasn't even linked to him, and Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that, but yeah, that's funny that even came out. I don't even know how that even started. That's something I didn't even know was even going on.
Yeah. He told the story about how somebody else put the joke in and somebody else made a comment on the commentary, of all things, that Seth MacFarlane was a hack or Seth MacFarlane wasn't funny or something simple as that. It wasn't even out of Kevin's mouth. And then they start making jokes about Kevin. They make weight jokes. They literally put him in episodes. They get a sound alike to do his voice. And yeah. It's a long way to go. I mean,
yeah. Just to say fuck you, dude.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. It's,
that's just too much.
Yeah, somebody has like
an obsession.
It is an obsession because I've never really seen. He never really takes a hit. I mean, I know he said things like that. He doesn't really get Family Guy. He's only watched one episode, but he said things like, you know, I've seen him in interviews. He seems like a likable guy. I like him and whatnot. And obviously Ralph works for Seth, so they can't really say too much usually on Hollywood Babylon with right. Ralph being there because Ralph could get into trouble.
So, yeah.
But yeah, it was a shame that the show was axed. I like the idea of Clerks Sellout, where they literally emulate the making of Clerks by making Clerks within the world of Clerks.
Right, exactly.
I
thought that was one of the most hysterical, like, you know, and those were things that were talked about when we were actually recording the original cartoon. He had told me, you know, some of the upcoming episode ideas, and they were really funny. And one of which was that where they were going to actually do the filming of the original Clerks, where the Dante and Randall character has that idea and someone from Hollywood gets it and distributes it and all sort of stuff. It was pretty funny how he was going to do it. And there were some even other ideas that, you know, like, oh, God, hopefully he gets to use these.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. Some of the things that we've been working on recently, obviously Babylon Begins, the silly little film that really got too big and away from it. It really was meant to just be like a small sort of greeting card film. With the amount of people that watched that, obviously led into us making this Muse biopic that we're making based on one story that Kevin's told a couple of times that I love. We've even got your good self to play yourself in it.
That's right.
So, one of the ideas that I had was to do, it was called Smuppets, and it was essentially a bunch of animals, like KP Bear. So Kevin Patrick Bear, and they were all sort of animals, and they hear about this documentary that's getting filmed based on animals, and so they decide to be as interesting as possible. So they start acting out scenes from Clerks,
right.
But animal versions of Clerks, and KP Bear writes a script on the back of a leaf. That emulates, and it's basically what I want to do one day, you know, is write a film about the making of Clerks and how you guys all got your start. And because, well, we really don't have the money or resources or any of the actors who were originally involved, I thought, do it with puppets, make it set in the jungle, make it a sort of parable, sort of like the animal version. And then, you know, you can have a Harvey Weinstein type documentarian who then takes it on the road sort of thing. So I guess that's kind of a similar idea, but it would be amazing just to see just even a straight to DVD movie, because
right.
people would watch it. You get, you know, millions of people watching that.
Yeah. Well, dude, the resources are going to be there for you soon. So
yeah,
definitely. So just hold on. And after this pod comes out and people, or not just this one, but as soon as we start doing this a little more, I think we're going to get a whole lot more support to do all that stuff too.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fun. And you know, I think that's the point of this. That's why it's called For the Love of Smod. Everybody should be doing this. Kevin, yeah. Ralph, and Jay, and everybody, they love it. It's fantastic. And if nothing else, it's good promotion from them. So they're predisposed to like it sort of thing.
Right.
It's good fun. I know that I'm not really sure about yourself, Brian. You probably agree, but creativity that feeds creativity is the best kind of creativity, really, because it'll go on forever. That's the snake eating its own tail. So I know Kevin like loves the fact that people like Tarantino, he doesn't like to divulge any of this sort of, like, you know, what's in the suitcase kind of thing, because he likes people being creative and thinking about it and coming up with ideas. So that's a great thing, and the fact that people embrace it like Kevin instead of suing us, it's a good thing. So yeah,
where are you guys based? I'm Sean, where are you at?
I'm in Long Beach, California. I'm right outside LA, up against right near Huntington Beach area,
the LBC. And Jen?
Yeah,
I'm from LA, near Culver City, Venice Beach area.
She's the main area that you would know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really unbearably hot right now.
Oh,
so.
It's been so humid today. It was ridiculous.
It's been outrageous.
It feels like I'm back in Ohio.
It feels like I'm back on the East Coast. I lived on the East Coast for a while, Jersey area, and I just, like, the humidity is killing me.
God-awful, yeah. I lived with some family for, like, a year in Ohio, and that sucked.
Ohio is definitely rough because it's in the middle of the country, so you don't even really have, like, an ocean breeze and stuff.
No, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was in Dayton, too, so it was right outside Cincinnati, so it was, like, in the suburb area, so nothing to do. It's really hot. It's really cold.
Right.
That was horrible.
Yeah, I've never been there. I don't think I will ever go there. I like my cities. I like things to do.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So, Brian, what would you say would be your sort of favorite scene, favorite character from Clerks, let's just say?
You know, that's tough. That's like asking a mother her favorite child. You know, they all the characters of all the films, they all, you know, have their own special meaning on them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, doing the first film, it was the first time all of us were doing a film, and that whole experience of getting it done and going to Sundance and having the well reception that it had and stuff like that was kind of a cool ride that then led us into Mallrats. Now here it was. We're working on an actual studio film and we're out in Minnesota and here it is, you know, Shannon Doherty's involved in the film. It was just, you know, at the time and Ben Affleck and all these other great actors. And it was just, you know, a really weird type of time. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, moving on to like Dogma and Chasing Amy. And once again, just, it was some really, they're all well-written characters and they're all well-written movies, you know. Even Jersey Girl, like I actually enjoy Jersey Girl quite often.
Me too. Everybody laughs at me. They're like, Jersey Girl. And I'm like, I think it's a really good movie. Like, I'm also a girl who will cry at the drop of a hat.
Right.
My boyfriend makes fun of me all the time. I watched Battle LA and from start to finish was crying. And he's like, why are you crying? I'm like, I have no idea.
I laugh throughout that whole movie, though.
I don't know. I cry. I'm a hysterical mess. Like, I'm literally like, like my lips quivering, everything. It's terrible. But I love Jersey Girl. Like, yeah. I don't care. Everyone can make fun of me. It's a great movie.
Now, that's a film that I wasn't involved in, but yet I enjoyed the writing from it. I knew where he was coming from. He was a new father himself at the time. And, you know, his own father had passed not too long thereafter. It was really a weird time for him as well, you know. And, it's, you know, and all the rest of them have been, the cartoon was one of my favorite times I've ever had doing anything just because it was so much fun and these characters did and could be anything they wanted to because it was, you know, a cartoon world. And
do you like the voice acting better than regular acting or do you like your stage acting the best?
Well, the voice acting, obviously, it's not as easy as people think. It's not like you just go in there, clear your throat and start reading words. You really do have to put some energy in it because it's in a cartoon world, you sound kind of boring if you just talk normally. So you got to kind of be like cartoon Dante, like, you know, like Randall. What's with you?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you see how I'm doing it in real life, I would look ridiculous on screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's that type of thing that the cartoon acting was. But we got to work with so many people, had cameos just in those six episodes, that it was so much fun to work with. You know, and then, you know, the other films that I've done, I really enjoy every single project that I worked on. I can't say that, oh, well, such and such was not that great of a deal. You know what? It was kind of every one had its benefit.
Yeah. Did you ever have any difficult customers when you were working, obviously not, no pun intended, any difficult people that you worked with, or do you ever sort of see any altercations between actors? Obviously, I think, you know, I've heard people speak about Jeremy London going up to Jason Lee and saying, you know, stop stealing the film from out under my feet, I'm the lead, not you, sort of thing. And that, obviously, because he was new to acting, that sort of made him a bit insecure about things. Anything like that that you've witnessed that's made you sort of uncomfortable on a set?
Yeah, no, nothing really ever. You know, I saw things that that was just like, well, you know, it's the first film in Mallrats. There were things that you could tell, like, oh, okay, it's L.A. It's not L.A., but I mean, it's a union film. It's a Hollywood film. This is how stuff works, and that's how it works. I wasn't a privy to that whole, like, stop stealing the film from me. Yeah. You know,
it was a little weird.
Yeah, but there were also a lot of – there was some slacking issues, not on Jason's part or anybody on our end's part, but there was some slacking on certain things going on there that was just like, wow, I can't believe people are doing this and can get away with it that way, you know, that type of thing. But otherwise, we had a blast, and, you know, I think the product was very funny. Now, that was Kevin's learning curve of how – you know, how the network, or in this case, how the studio would come in and go, well, you should do it like this, or well, you should do it like that. And his original ideas, I thought, should have been the way we went forward with it, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. I believe a studio should never have a say in what goes on in a movie.
Well,
they have to a little.
They have their money interest in at heart. So, you know, they bring in people who say, like, look, is this going well enough that we'll get our money back and then even make more money back, you know?
So yeah, definitely.
You got to understand their side of it.
But you shouldn't be able to change plot points and stuff like that.
That's why you try to negotiate deals like, you know, Louis C.K., who has an amazing deal with FX, you know, where they just give him the money. They have no input whatsoever. He gives them back, you know, a finished product, and they air it. And then that's how it goes.
The world is crazy.
Right. And he makes a ton of money on it because I think his operating budget is something ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. No, really?
Yeah, As an actor, do you ever have to deal with things like that, with the studio telling you you should do things a certain way?
You know, actors actually face more of like, you know, you need to drop some pounds, or, hey, you know, you should, you know, get a little more fit, or, hey, you know, I've never seen it where they've been like, this is how it's going to be done. First of all, I've never been that important enough where they go, this whole thing is riding on you, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there are the people who have their entourages and have four people in their ear going, you should do it like this, or, you know, don't say this because so-and-so will remember that, you know, things like that. There's that whole politics and gaming that goes on of being out in LA that it's just, you know, you got to establish yourself. And if you think about it, the people who really are successful are the people who don't listen to anybody, who just do what they feel is what they want to do. And someone is a prime example, is obviously Kevin is a prime example of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially over here, you have to be able to, like, make your point, be the person you are. If you conform, you're just going to fall into the crowd and not be noticed. Like, Kevin doesn't let anybody, like, really say anything to him because he is his own person. He's going to make his own decisions. And that's how you got to approach it out here. If you conform, you're just going to get lost.
Yeah, definitely. And the crowd is huge out here, too. So it's like, it's impossible to get your voice heard. Nearly impossible. I got freaking lucky with being able to talk to Megan and stuff and start to do a little bit of stuff here and there with James, and then this pod, and then working with Chris and on his projects a little bit. And
well, that's what the growth of this medium has become. This medium of podcasts and web series and the internet has really opened up another distribution stream for creative people who don't have the connections necessarily to get things through the normal mainstream way of getting a television show or getting a film that's out and gets distribution, or even on DVD if you're lucky. And that, even that sort of distribution style is starting to fade because of the cost.
It's too expensive.
Involved. Yeah. So now doing podcasting and doing streaming media and doing, you know, streaming of web series, it's a way to get that creative outlet out there and hopefully to try to monetize it somehow into making it a living for yourself.
Dude, would you ever consider doing your own podcast or doing your own live video? Yeah.
I actually have considered it for the past 2 years a few times. It's just I'm trying to think of what would be the angle. I mean, is it just me just riffing
kicking
on
it with
dudes?
Your friends?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hanging with your friends, dude. And just take all the friends, you guys go play poker one night. Actually, when you're playing poker, set would be really cool, as you already have that round table, set those mics up in the middle and play poker and just talk shit back and forth. That'd be hilarious.
That's a great idea, Sean.
I mean, that is exactly what we do. I mean, and we could just call it the home game, and that's it. Home game with Brian O'Hall.
Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, And not necessarily every time it's a game. It could be just anything. And then it's so funny because that's how Tell 'Em Steve Dave, they record theirs while sitting at a poker table, which is so funny.
Yeah.
You know, and those type of things, and these are the type of conversations that you have with your friends, and then someone comes up with some bizarre point that they just heard somewhere, and then everybody rips on it.
Yeah, and it's just, that's kind of how you do in normal life. Is that what I figured out, is Kevin and Mosier just, they're so perfect. When they get together and start talking, you literally feel like they're sitting at a coffee shop, talking back and forth, and they're just friends hanging out, just talking, laughing, and just having a good time. And you just feel like a fly on the wall, and that's what really drew people to that podcast, and I think, first.
Right, exactly. And you know, and Kevin was smart taking this emerging type of entertainment, you know, a few years ago, and then saying, you know what, let's make this into something that's a regular thing, and we can do anywhere. I can do it from on the road. You could be home. We can link up just like how we are. We're all linked up here.
Halfway across the world.
Right. And, you know, it's pretty funny how the technology has gotten to the point where you can have entertainment done from an amalgamation of many different places.
Yeah. Sweet.
Like, who uses the word amalgamation? Come on.
Here's one of those SAT words.
Right. One more question for me. Have you, or what was your favorite scene that, like, that you've done for Kevin, that you're just, every time you see it, or like you get that feeling again, that when you played it and you're like, fuck yeah, I nailed that shit.
Well, I'll just get it out of the way. I mean, making out with Rosario Dawson. All right. Bam. Okay. That was very nice. I have a wonderful
girlfriend. I want to make out with Rosario Dawson.
Exactly. I have a wonderful girlfriend of 18 years. So, but at the same point, here I was making out with Rosario Dawson. Second one probably would have to be the go-kart scene. That was a blast, just being at a go-kart park all day. When they called lunch, I was like, I don't need lunch. I'm good. I'm just going to literally
I would do the same thing.
And that's all I did, is I just stayed on the track. And it was this go-kart track place somewhere in Orange County. I forget the name of it. I think it was somewhere, I think Pole Position or something like that, in Orange County or in Anaheim or something like that. And it had like 5 to 7 different types of tracks. That was really, really a cool place. We did one whole afternoon, morning and afternoon there. It was just a blast. You know, and the cartoon, once again, was a blast coming in studio week after week. And who do we have coming in next? It was a lot of fun.
Is there anyone that you would really love to work with? Be it an actor, be it a director, anybody.
You know what? I'm a huge fan of Ricky Gervais. So I would love to work with Ricky. And there's a weird, bizarre kind of doppelganger thing going on with our looks, the two of us.
Yes, especially when he had the beard in the office. Yeah, you could, if they'd gone a different way and went for a more literal American remake, I have to say, you could have played Brent perfectly.
Right. And so I would love to work with him somehow, like either we're brothers or, you know, I'm his evil twin or his more fatter twin. I have no idea. But I think I would love to work with him. I think his comedy is brilliant. You know, I would love to work with him. I would love to work with Anthony Hopkins would be something. I would love to do, you know, back in the time when Merchant Ivory films were strong, I love those period type of pieces, you know. So I wouldn't mind pulling off one of those at some point.
Yeah. What about a genre? What kind of, is it like a certain genre that you long to do, like a Western or sci-fi? Something?
I would love to do a sci-fi. I would love to do something sci-fi because that's one of my favorite genres to do. I think that and maybe some sort of fantasy, you know, Middle Earth type of something.
Yeah.
You know?
That's cool, yeah.
I totally see you in a throwback 1950s kind of sci-fi movie that's sort of purposely hammed up for the sake of mocking the old way. You're wearing a silver suit, you've got a goldfish bowl on your head, and you're pointing to some meteorite that's just crashed on the surface of Mars. I see that.
Do a redo of when the day the Earth stood still.
Yeah.
I think he'd be good in a Night of the Comet if they redid Night of the Comet.
There you go.
If anybody's seen that movie, I mean, I'm the only one out of my friends who's ever seen it. So,
or anybody listening tonight has got to get working on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're already remaking Plan 9 from Outer Space, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Which is called Plan 9. I have no idea if it's meant to be taken for serious or if it's meant to be a complete and utter piss take, just like the original. Although, I don't think Ed Wood... You guys have seen Plan 9 from Outer Space, yeah?
Of course.
I haven't.
It's the worst film of all time. It's one of the best worst films of all time. If you think of films like The Room... where you sit down and you're like, wow, this has been, you know, panned the world over. This is a terrible movie. And you sit down, and because it's so terrible, because
you can't help but watch it,
it's like, oh my God, this is brilliant.
They Live is one of those movies for me, too. They Live. Movie. I'm sorry. I was born in 87, so, like, They Live for me is, like, it's kind of pushing it, even though I love Night of the Comet. As cheesy as it is, I love it.
He's a great guy, by the way. I got to hang out with Roddy Piper, and what a nice guy. Yeah,
very cool.
We were at a convention together. As a matter of fact, the Rock and Shock convention that's up in Worcester, Massachusetts. I had done the convention before, like 4 years ago. As a matter of fact, Jay was at that one as well, and Roddy Piper was one of the guests as well. And so they had us going into Boston to do a radio spot before the opening of the actual convention. And so we had like about a 45-minute ride from Worcester into Boston. And so I'm in the limo with him and his son. And just generally, what a nice guy. And then here I am sitting in a car, like opposite an idol of, you know, a teenage childhood idol of mine when I used to watch the WWF, back when it was the WWF, and seeing Roddy Piper would come in. Now, even though he would do the Scotsman thing, there was never any Irish wrestler. So I was like the closest one that I'd be like, yeah, go Roddy. You know what I mean? against the Iron Sheik and all that stuff. So it was a lot of fun. It's just amazing. Sitting in a car and talking to him.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some, you know, stories. I think it was Mick Foley that told the story that painted him in such a good light as being like this, you know, he's such a hulking guy. I don't know what he looks like now, but I've seen photographs. But he's such a sort of a big guy, and you see him in They Live, and he's, you know, bursting out of his shirt and things like that. And you expect this big, gruff character. But you sat down to watch, I think it was Beyond the Mat, the wrestling documentary.
Right.
And supposedly was in tears at the end because he's like, that's what it's like. It's lonely. Because Beyond the Mat was a precursor to The Wrestler, you know, the film with Mickey Rourke. They're both exactly the same. They paint a lonely picture for these kind of athletes. And, you know, it's nice to hear. It's the same when, like, Kevin breaks down during a story and things like that. It's good to see a sensitive side to someone.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what it is. It's... you know, sometimes it's not what everybody thinks that lifestyle is. And sometimes there are heartbreaking stories about it and loneliness about it as well. But he was just generally just a nice guy, very nice guy.
It's strange to see. I went into HMV. I don't know. Do you guys have HMV over there?
Yes,
what is that? Yeah.
It's like a music store. It's a physical iTunes.
I just have
record stores
out here. We have Mon. We don't really have like Tower Records or anything anymore.
Yeah,
places you go are like little Mon Pa places. Besides that, it's all digital out here.
I went into HMV downstairs, as where the game section is, because I was looking for a sensor for my Wii that had broke when I moved house, and I was looking about and I was like, there's a game as classic, you know, retro super superstars of WWE or formerly WWF, and I was like, all right, and I looked in the front and it was all my wrestlers, and I suddenly felt old. The Rock is considered an old school wrestler now because he doesn't rock. Yeah, he does rock, but it's weird to see things like that. I think someone should what they did with the Expendables, but with wrestlers, a movie with supposed out of shape has been wrestlers and they're the stars. I'd pay to go see that twice in the month.
Yeah,
I have my movie list of things to watch just keeps growing as this podcast goes.
I know, especially with our old podcast too, Jen. That was nuts.
Oh, I know. I don't even
binder.
Oh, I know. Well, Vulgar is one that I really need to see.
You haven't seen Vulgar?
No.
Does it justice.
You're in for a treat then.
Oh yeah.
Well, if you make sure you watch the theatrical release version, not the rated R version. There are two different ones. There's the one that we theatrically released, and then there was the rated R version that when we were getting distribution and they wanted to get them into Blockbuster. Blockbuster was notorious for not taking anything that was not rated. So they did a pass that was a rated R version. And I don't recommend it because it cuts out certain parts where you go, well, it makes it a tiny bit disjointed. But if you get your choice on Netflix, what one to stream, I would say to watch the theatrical release or not rated, whatever way they're phrasing it.
I have no idea which one I've seen, though.
I have to go back and look at that.
I hope it's the rated R version, because if it gets better, then...
It's our homework for next pod.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's darker. It's definitely a darker version. It's a darker version of the film.
The R-rated one is the darker version?
No. The
theatrical.
Right.
Okay. Listen, I want to see your Brutal Massacre, a comedy. I'm on your IMDb, so.
Yeah, that's a very funny film. That's a fake documentary about the making of a horror film. And it's a really, really funny, written by filmmaker Stephen Mena, who's come out with some really great horror films. One was Malevolence, and the other one was, I forget what the other one was, actually. But they're really, really great films. And this one was his issues that he felt when he made his first horror film that had come to light. So he wrote a script about the difficulties of making a horror film. And it's very, very funny. And it's got myself in it. It's got David Naughton from American Werewolf in London is in it. It's got Gunnar Hansen, who was the original Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's got Ken Furey in it, who was from the original Dawn of the Dead. It's got a very, very funny guy by the name of Jerry Bednob, who was in, I believe he was in Zach and Miri Make a Porno. And I forget what else he was in. He was also in 40-Year-Old Virgin, where he was the older Indian guy who was like, go fuck a goat.
Oh, yeah. I love him.
So he's in it as well. Ellen Sandweiss, who was one of the women from the original Evil Dead movie, is in it. Actually, all the women from Evil Dead are in the movie as well. So it's a very funny comedy.
I'm definitely going to see this.
That's another one that you could probably put on your Netflix queue. But otherwise, you could pick it up. There you go.
Yeah,
got it.
That Calendar Girl, there's no info on it on IMDb, but the cover alone makes me want to watch it.
Right. Calendar Girl actually just got picked up last month from Kevin Smodcast Pictures.
Really?
And they've changed the name of the movie to Miss December. The deal that Kevin has with Phase 4 Films and Smodcast Pictures, it's going to be one of the first ones released. I believe it's coming out in October. They've changed name to Miss December, but you can go to calendargirlthemovie.com to see the trailer, or YouTube to see the trailer of the movie. The movie of itself hasn't changed, just the title.
Cool. That's tell us about your turn on Pokemon.
Oh yeah, too.
a friend of mine, he does the voiceover. He's one of the directors of the voiceovers for the conversion once they come from Japan to get voiceover actors here in New York.
Our buddy Kyle LaBere does.
Right. So he calls me in from time to time to do some episodic work of different characters on Pokemon. So I'm in a couple episodes of Pokemon. I got one. There was one where I make an announce. I'm like an announcer. And then the other one, I play one of the main characters of one of the episodes.
Mr. Garrison.
Yeah, Mr. Garrison. Every time I hear that name, I just go automatically to South Park.
Yeah.
Now, children, you just got to...
Tell us what... I hate to, take up all your time, but tell us what were some of your influences when you were, getting into acting, and anybody you liked to aspire to be or sort of modeled yourself on?
For comedy, my father and I used to watch really all the great old school type comedies, The Honeymooners, All in the Family, The Odd Couple, Jeffersons, things like that. I was a big Jackie Gleason fan. I think he had great you know, old school comedic timing. Any of those comedies were really great. Any of the, you know, any of the Brooks movies were really, really good.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks had such great writing and comedic talents as well.
One of my favorite directors ever.
You know, and as far as dramatic actors, I was a big fan of like Jimmy Cagney and Anthony Hopkins. And you got to love, obviously, Robert De Niro and his body of work. And,
yeah.
And I really enjoyed actually Joe Pesci's work. And, you know,
my cousin Vinny.
Right. You know, you got to love that type of stuff.
Yeah. What do you think about the criticism and the backlash that Tony Hopkins is receiving at the moment? He's been dubbed Anthony Paycheck Hopkins, in the fact that he just does jobs for paychecks. Do you think that's true? I mean, I had an argument, literally an argument, not just a sort of jokey, jocular argument with a friend of mine defending his performance in Thor, because I think his performance in Thor is good. It's creepy. It's good.
I don't, you know, there might be sometimes in someone's life that you'll do that where you're just like, you know what, I'm free. I usually, you know, if my schedule is open and no one has come to me, I'm free. Obviously, why turn down something unless it's absolutely awful? Right. There are standards that have to be met of your own personal choice. Mm-hmm. But at the same rate, you know, there are tons of examples of people taking a paycheck. Like I know someone who dodged a huge bullet by doing the movie, but they didn't get the heat that they were in an awful movie. And this is someone that was, you know, who's a viewer skewer as well. You know, Gigli was an awful movie to some people. They'll say it was an awful movie, right? Now, I necessarily can't say that it is or not because I never even saw the movie. But when you listen to the press, they said it was an awful movie. But you know who else was in that movie?
Hmm.
Christopher Walken.
And?
J-Lo.
Pacino. Al Pacino was in the movie. He dodged a huge bullet because they never talk about, oh, well, that Gigli movie you made, Al Pacino. It was all on Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck who took all that heat.
Yeah, but I just point out, actually, he may have dodged a bullet with that, but see when he did Jack and Jill, he got the bullet right between the eyes.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and so there are times where you're either doing it because, again, we want you to be a part of this next project, and you say yes ahead of time or whatever. And then there are times where you go like, well, you know, whatever it is, yes, there are people maybe like Anthony Hopkins who took a deal that, you know, because it was a paycheck. I think it was Michael Caine who did an instructional video where he talked about how he chooses his scripts. Like, in the winter, I choose scripts that bring me to warmer weather. And in the summer, I choose scripts that bring me to a colder weather climate. I mean, that was a running joke for the longest time with other actors. But there are people, you know, like, I'm going to do this movie because I'm shooting in an exotic location. There are people who just, because of that.
I heard that Christopher Walken doesn't turn down parts. He looks at it and goes, okay, I've not played this character yet. I'll do it. Because he doesn't believe in it. He just always...
He just likes to work, period.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you should mention Gigli. I was at a car boot sale, which is like a kind of flea market, and somebody had... They hadn't like made a very good attempt, but they had put together Gigli and Jersey Girl as the Bennifer bumper pack, and they taped it with gaffer tape, and it was 50 pence.
That's funny.
And I bought it because my copy of Jersey Girl has a scratch on the side of the cover, and I'm all about presentation. So I bought it. I still haven't watched Gigli.
Don't, really. I watched it out of, like, I'm bored. There's nothing on TV. I would have rather, like, put Firefly on or something that I can actually enjoy besides Gigli. Never again.
Yeah.
That bad.
Jesus. Yeah, dude, and I like bad movies. Like, I love bad movies. I put bad movies on all the time just to watch. Will never watch Gigli again, ever.
I tell you, I will never watch Popeye the movie again.
Popeye the movie?
I love Popeye. Popeye Demolition Man.
You're talking about the Robin Williams Popeye?
Yes. Oh, I watched it because I saw it as a kid. I thought, yeah, I liked it as a kid. I sat down to watch it and... I've wanted to drill my own brains out. It was so dull and weird and strange. Oh.
Yeah, sometimes it's never good to rewatch a movie that you loved as a child.
Yeah, I did the same with the Mario Brothers movie. Oh.
Oh, I know, I did that too. I loved that movie.
That was so awesome.
Oh, and it ruined it for me.
I worked with John Leguizamo in M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening.
Yeah. The Happening.
I had a brief cameo in that, but it was all my scene was all with John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
We're during one of the lunch breaks, and you know, he's from the Bronx in New York. I grew up in the Bronx in New York until I was 10. And we just got to talking, and so we got real comfortable with each other. And so I started goofing on him about so are you working on the next Mario Brothers after this? What are we doing? You know? And he was just like, ugh. And then the next thing, right. It was either that or we were going to talk about Spawn. I was like, those are the two things I kept bringing.
He was good in Spawn, though.
Yeah, I know that. But I'm just, those are the two movies I just kept jokingly annoying him with. Like, those are the two go-tos.
We should probably wrap up. Just one last thing, if I can. I don't know if you're willing to do this, sir, but I have a friend out there, a massive fan. His name is Corey, and it would make his millennium if you told him you really weren't meant to be here today.
Really? I mean, we're literally only 12 years into this millennium, and this is what's going to make it for the rest of them. He has low expectations about the future, unless. Yeah. He is of a Mayan background, and he has a jump on what's going to happen on the 22nd of December. Hey, Corey. Yeah, it's me. Yeah, Brian O'Halloran. Yeah, it's that Brian O'Halloran. Guess what, Corey? I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yes. Applaud you. Thank you very much. But yeah, thank you for coming on the show. It was a blast. I could go on talking for eternity if we didn't all have obligations. Like sleep.
And if it wasn't 4 o'clock in the morning.
It was a privilege talking to you, right?
It was a privilege. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show, Brian.
Not at all, Christopher. Sean, Jen, thank you guys so much for having me. Well, anytime. I'm glad I was able to surprise you.
I was flabbergasted for the first like 10 minutes. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I was sitting here going, what the fuck? I was rushing home from work. I was like, we got to do this podcast. He was like, I got a surprise for you. I'm like, what the hell could it be?
Nice. See, and I didn't even know there was a surprise until we got on air.
Yeah, I didn't want to say too much. Just to let you know, we have 4 more surprises for 4 more episodes.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. But yeah, as I said, Brian, in fact, everybody, it's been an honor speaking to you. So you've been listening to For the Love of Smod Pod with me, Christopher Downey.
Me, Sean Clear.
Me, Jen Cordova.
And temporarily me, Brian O'Halloran.
We don't really have a sign-off like go have a week. Go watch one of Brian's movies. In fact, go and watch all Brian's movies. Off you go. For the Love of Smod.